meetings in the Butkovich Room, and members present are Representative Connell, Representative Phillips, and the Chair. The agenda for this morning is Senate Bill 418, committee substitute for Senate Bill 842, and Senate Bill 418. 741 is an act relating to child support enforcement, providing for effective date. 842 is an act providing for permanent fund dividends and providing for effective date. And Senate Bill 418 relating to this disposal of land for agricultural development. I might mention members absent are Smith and Hayes. The first bill that we're going to take up this morning is Senate Bill, a committee substitute for Senate Bill 741. We have people to testify. I don't have the sheet here, but who's the first on the list to testify?
I haven't signed in. My name's Elizabeth Claudio.
Great. Would you like to be the first shot here, Elizabeth?
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Elizabeth Claudio, C-U-A-D-R-A. My testimony is on behalf of two organizations, the League of Women Voters of Alaska and the Juneau League of Women Voters, which is one of the seven chapters in Alaska. We support enactment of the bill in its present form. Child support enforcement in Alaska needs a good deal of improvement, and the subject has become one of six or seven priority items on the legislative list for the League of Women Voters of Alaska. In January of 1980, the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women issued a report based on mid-1979 data, which said that only 44% of the families for which courts had ordered child support payments were actually receiving any payments at all. That only 18% of the cases showed no arrearages, and that in the child support enforcement agency's caseload, there was a total of 17 million owed to families where there had been existing court orders that were not being complied with. I don't know what the data would say now. I don't know what the numbers would be now. There was a 1981 report of the House Research Agency that basically focused more on comparison with structures in other states, enforcement techniques, and so on. The bill before you, we would like to see passed without any change. It was improved in the Senate Finance Committee. It would authorize and require the CSEA, the Child Support Enforcement Agency, to charge penalties and interest on late payments later than 10 days. The money that comes from the penalties would go to the state to help fund the system, presumably. The money that comes from interest payments would go to the children that are due to support. The effect of this, I think, would be to somewhat, first of all, to somewhat alleviate the impact of lateness in the child's household. And second of all, to remove the de facto economic disincentive that now exists that acts against making timely payments. What exists now, zero interest, is a de facto exemption from the general rule that there is interest on debts. And one form, the most analogous form of this rule, is the Alaska statute that places interest on judgments. That rate right now is 10.5%. From the, maybe we should think about the dynamics of what probably happens from two points of view. First of all, in the child's household, the impacts of lateness at all can be very great because a lot of these families are, some of them are on AFDC, others are on the edge of it. They are single parent households, many of them supported mostly by women, supplemented by the child support payments that are supposed to be coming. So lateness of what usually is in the range of $100 per month per child payment. And by the way, that amount is only about a third to a fifth of what it costs to pay for child care, so that the parent who has custody of the children can go out and work if the children are not in school. The impacts of that lateness can be things like missed mortgage payments. We all know if we're too late on our mortgage payment, we pay interest on that. Delay in payment on other bills. My plumber charged me 1% per month, 12% per year when I was late on a major plumbing bill recently. 18% a year on late payments on Visa accounts and other credit card accounts. So we all know that most of the debts that we owe, including those in the child's household, are going to accrue interest if the payment is late. And what about the obligor's point of view? Here's the paycheck. Here are 6 or 7 bills to pay. If I can't pay them all, which one am I going to put off? I'm going to put off the one that bears no interest. And all the others do. They bear interest from 12 to 18% or more, most of them nowadays. So the child support payment goes to the bottom of the list. I'll put it off till next month. And next month it happens again. Senate Bill 741, I think some of the improvements that were made in the bill by amendment, one of them was adding the shall in section 4, page 2, line 2. Another one was keeping the narrow limits on the agency's discretion regarding the interest rate in section 6. We are dealing with an agency that sometimes has shown symptoms of less than total enthusiasm about this job. And I think the legislative needs to put specific criteria on what the agency does. And the bill in its present form does that. Incidentally, it's my understanding that the reference to the same rate of interest as on delinquent taxes, I don't know where the bill is now, but the present statute makes that 8%. It would be amended to be 12% under House Bill 101. The latest form of which I've seen is SCS, CS, HB 101 Finance, and I don't know where it is now. But if that passes, that's the rate of interest you're talking about. We have a fundamental social concept in our society. That is that both parents should share in the support of their children, even after there's a divorce. And that support of the children by the way of welfare should be merely a last resort. We need a lot of improvement in our child support enforcement system in Alaska so that court orders won't be ignored when absent parents can pay, and so that the money will be there for the child's household. This bill would make one small but very important and I think long overdue improvement in that system. So we ask that you report the bill out quickly with a due pass recommendation and schedule it for a floor vote.
Do it right now.
Question of the witness?
Do it right now.
Any questions of the witness? Thank you very much. Senator Lyson, do you wish to testify on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have some testimonies with here, some information. I know you're busy.
We have one in fact. We already have it.
Already have
it? Yeah. Oh. And newspaper clips. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Eliason, District B. I'm merely here to answer questions on the paper bill. I appreciate you bringing up this late date, and I know you're very busy, and I appreciate that.
Are there any questions of Senator Eliason? The chair will entertain a motion to pass this bill out.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 741. I believe it's fine.
Is there any objections? So I have. They'll come and get them. Finance chairman. The next bill that we have on the calendar is committee substitute for Senate Bill 842. The proposed amendments are recommended by the people working most closely on the bill, Representative Malone, Susan Burke of the Attorney General's Office, and Cliff Groth of Representative Gardner's staff. They include technical amendments on effective dates as well as earlier trigger dates if the Supreme Court has not issued an early decision. Who is the first member would like to testify on this? Representative Malone, do you wish to testify?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, since this is the governor's bill, perhaps the representatives of the administration like to offer their comments first, Susan Burke and Susan Banking. I'm only really here to answer any questions or perhaps provide some information on item seven on the list of changes. So the short sheet that he has, and also Mr. Gross is the same.
Thank you, Representative Malone. Susan, would you like to testify first, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Susan Burke, and I am here representing the Department of Law and the administration on this bill. When the Finance Committee substitute was picked over carefully for technical problems, we discovered one or two technical problems with the effective date sections. And the Rules Committee substitute that I believe the committee has before it this morning has those technical changes in it. Section 14 of the Act was a section that goes with sections 2 through 5, and its effective date was simply put in the wrong effective date section. And I can go through it in more detail if you like, but the changes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 listed in the memorandum that you have before you are the changes that would take care of these technical problems and make the effective dates work correctly.
Which one are those again? 1, 3, 4, and 5?
Numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on your memorandum. Sections 14 and section 24 had ended up in the wrong effective date section.
Any questions of Susan Burke on those amendments? Representative Connell.
What does it do when all of these are done?
When all is said and done, the sections, as I think most of you are aware, the bill does several different things. One is to provide for an ongoing per capita system in the event we lose the case. Secondly, it provides for a prospective cumulative distribution system in the event that we lose the case, but the court says it would be okay if you did it that way. Thirdly, it makes some changes in the existing act, primarily relating to including children in the program. Section 14 of the bill went under the number 2 category, which was, it was a section that was designed to make the prospective accumulation system work. It had inadvertently been put into an immediate effective date provision, and we didn't want that. We wanted to put it in with the sections for the prospective only distribution. Section 24 of the bill was a section that, in the event that dividends are distributed at $1,000 per person, before we get a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, thereafter the court upholds the program, Section 24 tells the Commissioner of Revenue how to determine the value of the dividend for the first year of the existing program after a favorable decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. That section had been in an effective date section that went with this prospective accumulation, and it was just mixed up, and it was simply a technical error in the drafting, and that's what we're trying to correct today.
Well, as it was, I obviously I haven't had a chance to piece all this together, but is the effect of this to change the deadline for the Supreme Court to rule from October to July 15th?
Mr. Groh is going to be talking about that. some people representing the administration, myself included, and Commissioner Williams, have talked with members of the legislature about the advisability of changing the date. I have not had an opportunity to hear from the governor from his own lips whether he thinks that's a good idea or not, and so I hesitate to talk about that or bring it forward. I think that to the extent that he has thought about it, I don't think he would have a major problem with it, but I can't tell you today that yes, we've talked to him about it, he's thought about it and likes it.
Well, but the question was, is that what it does?
Numbers 1 through 5 on your memorandum do not.
We're just addressing those now.
That's all I'm talking about at the moment.
Another person will testify on the date.
The changes that I've talked about that are listed, numbers 1 through 5, simply take care of these technical effective date.
Are there any further questions of Ms. Burke? Thank you very much. If there's no further questions, we'll take the next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Is that Mr. Grove? Okay, identify yourself, sir.
I'm Cliff Grove.
Excuse me, let the record reflect that the representative Hayes is present.
I'm Cliff Grove, Mr. Chairman. I'm staff of the legislature on this issue. So there are two sets of changes in the Rules Committee substitutes before you go substitute. Susan Burke talked about the first group, which were some technical problems in the effective dates we straightened out in this draft from the draft prepared by the House Finance Committee. And those are numbers 1 through 5 in your memorandum, as she said. Numbers 6 and 7 deal with the other change, which is a change in the trigger date, so-called trigger date, in terms of the situation which would occur in case the Supreme Court did not rule in this case until later this year. The point of this provision, as Susan has said, is that there is language in the bill which will take care of the contingency of the Supreme Court not ruling this year, and there is some section 19 of the bill deals with that with that contingency in terms of making distribution for sure, even if there is if the Supreme Court has not ruled. The chances of this are considered somewhat unlikely. The Supreme Court term runs like a school year from October to July, and the current term will probably end in early July of this year. The Finance Committee substitute had a provision for a date certain of October 19th of this year. If there had been no decision by that date, an automatic distribution would take place. And additional research since that draft was prepared last week, it's tended to show that it's unlikely that there will be a Supreme Court decision by October 19th if there is not one by the end of this term, by the earlier middle of July. Another consideration that rose in the minds of some people was that the distribution in the continuing program is set up so that the residency period is mostly in the winter each year to help ensure that only bona fide residents of Alaska receive distributions under this program. The first year, and the way the residency period is set up, the first year would be somewhat different, I mean, depending when the Supreme Court rules. I mean, it would be a form of, in terms of when the date is set up. From any time that you start the program off, there would be a 4-month period for which people can apply again under the program. And if you assume, if they go to the end of that 4 months, they have to have been in the state, residents of the state for 6 months at that time, which means that whenever you start the program, people who've been in the state for 2 months and stay are eligible. And there was some consideration that it would be to guarantee that only bona fide residents of Alaska receive the distribution, that if you had an earlier trigger date, this year, people who would be eligible would only be people who were here now, and that there would not be what some people have been afraid of, kind of a magnet problem in the first year, that the news of this distribution as it goes on would draw people up to try to get it. A late trigger And this solves that problem completely with this trigger date. It is one that is picked because it will be right after the end of the current Supreme Court term, as I said, which will end right around the 4th of July weekend. And the last two changes, number 6 and 7, having my bill accomplish that, my memorandum accomplish that in the bill.
Questions of Mr. Brode? Representative McConnell?
How many, you mentioned, you know, that some, I gather everything you just said was that was centers around that if we hold it off longer, some extra people might get in the program that wouldn't otherwise.
No, I don't think that there's a, I think that there is a, been a concern throughout the time of the legislature that people that bona fide residents of Alaska would be eligible. And this was a...
Well, if we left it until October, you're saying that some people who move up here, or who, anybody who would have been here by 6 months, anybody who would have been here a total of 6 months by October, that would be a greater number of people than people who had only been here 6 months by
November. Not so much a greater number of people as perhaps there had been some concern about motivations. People had often said people would move up just for that purpose. This eliminates that possibility in the first year.
Well, doesn't that translate into some number of people?
I think there are people that leave the state every year, too. I mean, in terms of like, the number of people that are eligible, I mean, I don't know, in terms of absolute numbers, that will make a difference.
But then you're saying that some people would come here because they might get, become eligible for this, but conversely, don't you think that some of those other people who might leave would stay in order to be eligible?
Yes.
I believe Representative Malone wants to answer your question.
Sure, I would like to comment on, there isn't of course any way to quantify what sort of shifts in population might occur or might show up in the rolls, enrollment for the program as a result of shifting the trigger date back and forth. I guess sort of intuitively, the earlier the trigger date, probably the less the chances are that somebody could scoot up here and be here in time to qualify if that was a motivation. There isn't any quantification of the numbers. I think the main point in changing the trigger date would be that the court can do whatever it wants, and probably the if the court held the decision on the case over, and it would probably be for the purposes of hearing some more arguments, and that they're unlikely to issue a decision, not any more likely to issue a decision in the early part of their next term than they would be in the late part of this one. Again, that's a guess on what the court might do. What they do is up to them. On the public policy question, of course, I think the members of the committee are familiar with some debate that has taken place in the public committee meeting before, but that some people feel pretty strongly that either the dividend should be paid substantially before or else after the annual elections. And some people view that as a matter of propriety. Personally, I don't have any big feeling on that either way, but this would clear up that problem. One version of the bill, the date was set late in the fall, well into the fall term of the court, and would have placed the payments after the election. Current date of the bill might be just around that time, I guess, and the proposed trigger date would change it so that sometime in late summer would be the schedule of payments. But I think the main consideration is and the timing is that. Insofar as any reasonable prediction might be made of the timing of the court's decision, there isn't any good reason to believe that it would likely occur in the early part of their fall term, at least not any better reason to believe that it would occur before they recess, which would probably occur well before the July 15th proposal.
Representative Mays?
Even though the Supreme Court takes a break sometime in early July, isn't it possible that the decision that they might have reached, say, in, prior to that time, might not come down until maybe late as August or September? Even though they adjourn, it doesn't mean that there's nothing that there's their clerical work and one thing another goes on.
I think, Mr. Chairman,
On that, I'm not in a position to predict court. There has been a little research done on that to indicate where they have been making their decisions. Perhaps Susan would be in a better position to answer your question.
Representative
Hayes,
good. U.S. Supreme Court works on a term basis, and if they hold a case over from one term to the next, they simply don't issue any opinions during their summer recess. They will issue their last opinion sometime late June, excuse me, early July, and they don't issue any more opinions until they begin their October term. And what the research has disclosed is that of those cases, and it's very, very rare, by the way, for cases to be held over, and if they're held over, it traditionally has to be for the purposes of re-argument, which means you have re-argument sometime during October, and very likely a decision, perhaps not even until the beginning of 1983. So it probably would be unlikely that if they did hold it over, we'd have a decision on the case much before the first of 1983.
Assume that the court will not make a decision on the current dividend program, and I think you know my position on this bill here, but let's say this goes through the legislature. What are the chances of this being challenged? And if it's being challenged, aren't we back where we started from?
Representative, one thing I want to make clear, I'm sure the committee members recognize, but maybe not everyone has been following the legislation, does, is if the trigger date in the bill has to do with the payments in 1982, but the court decision itself would determine the shape of the program according to the legislation following that. If there's no decision, by the time the trigger date, payments would go out. However, the decision by the court, we presume, of course, we get one, would determine the shape of the program after that. It doesn't mean that, absent a decision, that we've given away the options to, retain something similar to what the current law provides. But going back to your question, the counsel for the governor probably is in a better position to answer your question, Randy.
Representative Hayes?
One of you mentioned political aspects of the triggering date. If you want to take the political considerations out of a triggering date, wouldn't it be better to make it sometime in November? So that rather than, it seems like any time before the general election would have the potential of having some sort of political ramifications, be it negative or positive to some people.
Mr. Brown. I guess any individual, particularly any politician, can make up his or her own mind on that. There are administrative reasons for not moving the trigger date too far back in the year, which were brought up by Commissioner Williams, and perhaps either Susan or Cliff would want to comment on that. There are administrative.
I'd be interested in hearing what those administrative reasons are. But Representative Phillips,
I want to hear from counsel on that, on my question.
Go ahead. Your question?
Okay, well, I remember the first teleconference we had about two, 3 months ago, the plaintiff in the present case claimed that this doesn't even do it. And I remember in the teleconference itself said that this was, in his opinion, was unconstitutional. So I'm just wondering, you know, what are the possibilities of, you know, coming back and going through the whole thing all over again with another challenge? And I just want to hear from Susan, you know, on that point.
Well, Representative Fields, I don't recall the present plaintiff really having said that, and...
Well, he said publicly.
That it was...
Which in the newspaper clipping.
He, in various facets of the plan that, in terms of the residency requirement, which I think that you were asking mm-hmm. about, he and other councils agree that this is, you know, likely to be constitutional, and this residency period was picked after a long consideration that way. I think what he was talking about was another provision in the plan, which is in the current bill, which provides for contingencies in terms of what happens in the payments in 83 forward, not for this year, in terms of the in terms of interpreting the Supreme Court decision. And he did raise that question. Other people, that's not.
Yeah, but to go back to your original question, it's always possible for people to challenge any piece of legislation.
Oh, I know that. This one's.
Yeah, but we've taken extreme care in drafting this to, you know, make policy decisions on residency and so forth and so on, that we think put this on the firmest possible constitutional grounds, given policy considerations that the legislature has with respect to, and the governor has with respect to distributing dividends. You know, I can't guarantee a victory in the event of a challenge, but I think we are on very firm constitutional grounds.
Mr. Groom. Well, Senator O'Connell, just you asked about the administrative considerations in terms of a trigger date. Commissioner Williams and Philip Wall, who's Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Revenue, considered this question a lot and have worked it out that the Department of Revenue needs approximately 30 to 45 days in terms of getting the checks out on a per capita basis as in the backstop plan. So there is not, it's not immediate, it's close to immediate from an administrative standpoint if the state wins the case. Terms of there may be some legal considerations to hold up in terms of there's a 25-day turnaround if the state wins the case where you decide to petition for re-argument, and so there would be 25 days after Supreme Court decision if there was no stipulation or waiver of that, that the state would have to wait. But administratively, checks could go out 28 to 48 hours if the state wins the case. If the state loses the case in any way, this backstop bill provides for per capita distribution for this year for 82. And that would take some period to set up. The Department of Revenue officials estimate in 30 to 45 days. That was a consideration in picking the trigger date in the Finance Committee substitute. Also one here in terms of allowing people enough time, both 34 to 45 days to get the checks out in terms of the ones that are ready to go now. And then you would have to have a 4-month new application period, which would go ahead to get applications for people who were ineligible for any, or for any reason were eligible but had not applied earlier.
Representative Hayes.
It seems to me that if the October 19th, October 19th triggering date, that it takes 30 to 45 days, and then the checks, people would receive checks sometime maybe between Thanksgiving and Christmas, a very appropriate time, or July 15th would get it. They'd get it pretty close to the general election, and prior to the general election. But did you indicate the administration has not taken any position, has no recommendation on number 6 or 7?
I haven't had a chance to talk directly to the governor about it. I did speak briefly with Jerry Reinwald, who indicated that at least some of the considerations that had been brought to our attention by Mr. Groh, for example, after talking and researching more about what the Supreme Court was likely to do, made some sense. but I have not, before this meeting, had a chance to talk to Jerry to see if he had had a chance to review that with the governor, and I've not had a chance to do it either. I think there are some good arguments to be made for the July 15th date, but I can't represent to you that the administration wholeheartedly supports that or has a position on it, because I haven't talked to the governor, I simply don't know. One consideration that, just speaking for myself and to caution you not on behalf of the governor, given the fact that if the case does get held over to next term, which in my view is unlikely, that there is that remote possibility, I think it's unlikely, we will know early in July that if we don't have a decision, and it gets carried over, we'll know that by early July. We'll also be fairly certain that we won't have a decision by October 19th, which means that people are simply waiting around, knowing that those checks can't, you know, that the law will be such on October 19th. Barring some extraordinarily unusual circumstances, and there seems, I don't know, it seems silly in a way to just have the money sitting there when people could be using it during that interim period when much more likely than not we're simply waiting for time to pass until that October 19th date hits. I throw that out as another thought you might consider, not as an administration thing.
Well, in response to that question, that, you know, it may be a risky assumption that the members of the United States Supreme Court are among the best legal minds in the United States, but I think we can at least proceed with that assumption, and if they haven't been able to reach a decision on this by any particular date, doesn't caution and prudence suggest a little bit that maybe we ought to wait? Why, you know, if they can't reach a decision, then why do you feel that it would be wise for us to proceed with some other plan? You know, we're the same people that wrote the first plan that they can't figure out whether it's legal or not. Well, you're the one that's representing it before the court, you know.
Well, this plan is different from the plan that's before the court, decidedly different. I guess my own view of that is that you are sort of the same people who passed it in 1980, but not exactly. And there will be new people yet here, at least a few. Some members have decided not to respond next year. I'm not sure where I will be next year, whether I will be, you know, continuing to work for the administration on this. I guess from my own standpoint, I would rather get this in place now, with me having an opportunity to work on it, with this governor, present governor, having an opportunity to work on it and have his views be known and taken into consideration on it, since it's something that he cares about very deeply and is something that he views as one of the cornerstones, certainly, of his administration. And I think also that dividend distribution is important for all the reasons we argued before the state Supreme Court. I think there will be a decision before July. It's always possible, legally possible, for there to be a special session. That's extraordinarily expensive. I'm not sure anybody wants there to be a special session. You know, we're talking about this trigger date as if we're not going to have a decision by the end of this term. I believe that we will have a decision by the end of this term. It could happen next week. It's likeliest to happen after the adjournment of this legislature. We're talking about this trigger date in order to deal with what I view as an extraordinarily remote possibility, although there are people in the legislature who believe that it's worth it to do that. This was not a concept that was in the governor's original bill. It's something that he has indicated he can live with. I'm not sure I really answered.
Representative Phillips was trying to respond.
Well, I don't know. Honestly, this is my opinion. I think we ought to just go ahead and wait for the Supreme Court to make a decision. And if they say this present plan that the state has come up is unconstitutional, I'll be more than willing to come back down here and in special session to write it up the way the Supreme Court wants it to be. It seems to me we just ought to wait and know the facts first, and then come, you know, if the present plan is before the court is unconstitutional, we can rewrite the thing according to the way they want. You just even stated you don't know what you're going to do next year. We don't know what they're going to do. So how are we going to make plans on something that we don't know? And that's the problem I have. The other problem I have with this thing is the 6 months residency provision. I voted no on this before, but I'll go ahead and pass it out to the committee. I still think we ought to wait.
Representative Malone.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, of course, don't feel I'm under any compunction to defend the present plan that's on the books in that minute, but I think that there are good reasons for taking action now, even for proponents of the present plan, if you vote for the plan that's in law right now. One is that there really is a major legal infirmity in the present plan and does not make any provision at all for the residents of the state of Alaska who are not 18 years of age or over. And of course, in the work of this legislation this year, it's been made pretty clear by members of the bar that a lot of people that they think that definitely needs to be corrected. And if it's not, we know almost certainly the plan will be back in court. So we have a situation where the legislature can act and remove that infirmity or go to court on it again and then act. And so why put the plan back in court when all that would require would be the legislature perhaps to come into special session and then act after tying up individuals' time, money, and legal action. Secondly, under the proposals been worked out, I think pretty carefully, there is provision in the legislation to allow the present plan to go into effect with modifications to take care of problem areas. And secondly, there's also provisions for other alternatives similar to preserve some of the elements of the present plan, even if the present plan is thrown out. And those have been incorporated in the legislation, have been researched, work's been done on it. So probably delaying the decision really is not the most responsible course of action, but preserving the options of keeping a plan similar to the present one, or keeping elements of the present plan, depending on the court decision, preserving the necessity both of individuals, state, perhaps federal courts to come out with a lot of new rulings. There has been a lot of legal research done on the question since the original law was enacted, and I think people are familiar with that original law. And one of the things that didn't happen is there wasn't a great deal of long scholarly research go into that, and I'll state that pretty plainly because I was here for it. A lot of it was done after the fact, and I think that this legislation is based in large part on that. And so I don't think it is really responsible not to take action during this session, mainly due to the one major legal infirmity in the plan. It's on the books right now. And I think the work's been done. coming into special session, the only difference would be is that it might be at that time, if there were a court ruling, that the specific options, which are now several in the bill, would be clear. There isn't any guarantee of that. And I think that delaying action also puts the legislature, the state of Alaska, in a position where the they're asking the judicial branch of the government to determine all of our state policy. And I don't think that's responsible either. So I would just urge the legislature to take action now. I think the work's been done. The questions have been identified, never completely. And of course, even with a very clear, unequivocal set of statements out of the U.S. Supreme Court doesn't mean somebody else won't find something to take the program up by the end. But I think the work has been done. Even if the questions that are raised in the Zobel suit are decided all in favor of the state, there are questions remaining that were not raised in that case that will be back in court. Why ask people to do that before the legislature takes action? As a responsible branch of government, the legislature has the power to take action now, and they should do it.
Representative O'Connell?
Well, it's my understanding that the question of the teenagers is not part of it, and that's not before the court, is it?
No, but we have attorneys who have briefs all prepared and ready to go right. And talk to those people.
Okay, but I guess my question goes something like this. Can the court address that question even though the question is not before the court? They can't. So that, all right. And somebody said here that if the court is upheld, or if the state is upheld pretty much in total, or in fact in total, by the court, that checks will go out within 24 hours.
They could.
They could, and they most likely will, right?
Depending on
an injunction's issue, there will not be.
Yeah.
All right, so there's going to be a race to see who gets there first, the injunction or the checks. And once the checks go out, we all know that everything after that is moot, right? And that's what's at stake. Anybody that even entertains the thought that any further court action will be meaningful after $400 million worth of checks are dispersed is crazy.
Which is probably why the court will issue the restraining order.
I think there's another consideration I wanted to add in addition to Representative Malone in terms of this legislation brings improvements in the current plan, which makes it more stronger. I would also add that one of the points maybe raised by Representative O'Connell or Senator Phillips, that the current legislation before you protects the right of the state to bring the suit. The current plan, this bill, protects the right of the state to win the Zobel case. The current plan, at any time, the plan passed or the bill passed, compromised that and would be a kind of approach agreeable to all parties. And this is one where we had the 3-year suspension of the first 3 years, leaving the statute on the books and leaving the suit alive, so the state can win at any time and go back to the plan. Like a protected bill plan, you should know that it is the right of the state to win the suit is protected against the legislation.
Yeah, I don't. The chair would like to bring this back into focus. We're here this morning addressing amendments, making a rules committee change. I'd like to get back on there because we're taking up other people's time.
I'll make the motion.
Well, I would like to address amendment 135, which Ms. Burke presented to us first, which are mostly technical. That was I think we should address those five and the other ones separately on the trigger date. The chair will entertain a motion on the first five amendments, page 18, 19, 19, 19, 19, lines 16, 6, 8, 17, 28. Representative
Phillips.
I move those amendments.
Is there any objection?
Those amendments to the Finance Committee substitute?
Set rules.
They are amendments.
To the rules or the Finance?
They're committee substitute for Senate Bill 842, right? And we're making amendments to that. We're going to make a new Rules Committee substitute?
Well, Chairman, we have a Rules Committee substitute before it's already prepared that incorporates apparently all seven items.
Do you want to address all seven amendments at one time then?
That's what I was going to suggest to do, Mr. Chairman, and then we can get on at once with the question. But I move that we move HCS, CS, SB 842 rules out of committee, and then I'll have to ask the Senate.
Object. There is an objection. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Motion failed. Okay, the next one is we'll have to cancel. Eric, I apologize to you. We'll have to cancel your hearing.